Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to this special edition of the Four Years Teams Fire American Soccer Show. Round two review of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup 2014 edition as we take along and talk to you about those great 24 games, 23 actually, about what happened this past Tuesday and Wednesday night in round two of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Once again, great games all over the place as we discuss this tournament. Once again, the national championship of U.S. soccer for all those clubs in the professional and amateur ranks that are affiliated with U.S. soccer. First of all, let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. And talking about the San Diego Flash, it's just really, really heartbreaking when you've got a club that was not basically allowed to play their second-round match and had to forfeit it because the field that they were hoping to play on was not available. And apparently the people that originally had the field for their first-round matchup allowed the Flash to play their game. Unfortunately, the Corinthians decided to forfeit because they were not able to make the game, and the San Diego Flash advanced to the second round to face PSA Elite. And in the first round, it was PSA Elite that defeated LA Misioneros in penalties. It was a 1-1 draw through extra time and then a 3-2 win by PSA Elite in round of penalties. San Diego Flash, unfortunately, victimized and decided to forfeit their second round matchup against PSA Elite. So PSA Elite advances to the third round and takes on the Los Angeles Galaxy's 2 team that plays in the USL Pro League. You know, I see what people put on Twitter. I see what people do when they make a comment about, you know, what's working in Europe and it doesn't, you know, should be here. And the point I'm making is this, is that we haven't made it yet on a national stage. Meaning, you have a side like San Diego Flash, brought back by Warren Barton. Of course, Clint Alexander is a part of this. And they had to scramble to get a field ready. They had to scramble to look for something that was available. And unfortunately, to have a field available for them to play, it took them, if you go through the proper channels, it's a four-week period. And I am saddened that the Flash had to forfeit their second-round matchup. I'm saddened that the Flash had to say, we can't go forward with this because they did not have a field ready, PSA Elite. And what needs to be done when you're in the NPSL with this sort of thing? Basically, it's simple. And I'm not saying they have the money for it, but they're going to have to try to find a way, if possible, to build their own stadium. And like I've said many, many times, it doesn't have to be like a professional stadium like Red Bull Arena or BBVA Compass Stadium or like the Home Depot Center. You know, have a field, call it your own, have a couple of stands on the other side, you know, and just call it home if it's possible. And this is not complaining about it. This is not pointing the finger of blame. All I'm saying is that if the Flash one day hopefully can do this, then, you know, they wouldn't have to have these problems. And any club that's below the professional level doesn't have to worry about these sort of problems either. Now, if you go to Google Maps and maybe you go and check out the San Diego area, and obviously I don't know if the San Diego Padres would have allowed the Flash to use their field unless they're playing a baseball game that same night. I mean, I know Qualcomm Stadium is very big, and you don't want to put an Open Cup game at an NFL stadium. But if this was like, you know, as an emergency situation, but then again, you don't know because how much do the Padres and how much do the Chargers charge for the use of their facility? And that's the one thing. You know, it's always going to be about money. Always going to be about money. And we don't know if there was ever going to be an opportunity for them to create a stadium that's available somewhere in San Diego. Now, what about any of the universities? I mean, San Diego State, was their facility available for them to use? I mean, I'm assuming that they still have soccer over there, but the truth of the matter is, I don't know if they've removed it or not. I mean, if it's a women's game or a men's game, you would like to think possibly maybe San Diego State or University of California SD would have maybe an opportunity to use, their fields if it's possible. I don't know. You know, I'm not in tune with what's going on in San Diego. Only people from San Diego know what's going on. But to not have a match being played due to forfeit, you know, it's a shame. Because you wonder what could have been, what could have happened, what was the opportunity there to be available to discuss, not so much to discuss, but at least the opportunity to play the match and have U.S. Open Cup history. That is the question that we're all going to be wondering now. And is that answer there? We don't know. Hopefully we'll have an answer one day. I'm going to have Mr. Clint Alexander, CEO of San Diego Flash, coming on the show here on Tuesday to talk about the club and, you know, why they were not able to find a field available for them to play this Open Cup match, because this was big. This was important. And unfortunately, they had to cancel. Basically, that's the big question. And unfortunately, we don't know if there's an answer. And that's why I stress all the time, some of you that wants to see all these different mechanisms coming in to become part of the soccer fabric that goes on in Europe, once again, strides have been made. We are there, but we're not all the way there. And unfortunately, this is the situation that's in front of us right now when you support the sport. Because San Diego Flash, they need to find a field that they can use, and they can, you know, once they get their schedule, they can set it ahead to use the field that they probably share with a bunch of other clubs that are either affiliated with the NPSL or are not affiliated with the NPSL. And they're just going to, you know, these Open Cups, the scheduling for the Open Cups, you know, it's even a bigger one because you don't know if you're going to be home or the home team or the road team when you have those dates set. And once again, here's another example of why we're not there yet. And once again, I'm not trying to make people feel terrible. I'm not trying to make people feel like, you know, it's another loss in the battle. It's not a loss because time is on our side. Time is on our side when it comes to this wonderful game we call football soccer. And once again, it's a shame that the Flash could not play their second round matchup against PSA Elite on the West Coast. But hopefully, somewhere down the line, somewhere down the road, these clubs in the NPSL, that they don't have to always rent facilities to play these games, they'll be able to have their own facility that they can call home, and they can finally be a part of this tournament the proper way. So other great games here, Sacramento Republic defeating Ventura County 2-1. Laredo Heat defeating the Red Force 2-1. Orange County on the road defeating the Fresno Fuego 2-0. The Des Moines Menace, their U.S. Adult Soccer Association side, their under-23s, they defeated Real Colorado Foxes 3-0. Oklahoma City Energy FC defeating Tulsa Athletics 2-0 in the Oklahoma Derby. Harrisburg City Islanders defeating Lehigh Valley 4-0. Charlotte Eagles on to round three, defeating the Carolina Dynamo 3-1. How about that Croatian-American side in Chicago? RWB Adria with a extra time winner in the 93rd minute to defeat the Michigan Bucks to take a sweep of the Michigan sides. First on the road at Detroit City FC, then on the road against the Michigan Bucks. Now they're going to be in the third round against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Great for them. Orlando's under-23 side and their senior side advancing 4-1 Orlando City against Ocala. 2-1 Orlando City under-23s over Jacksonville United. Dayton Dutch Lions, a 2-0 win over Schwaben, another Chicago amateur side. AC, a German amateur, German-American amateur side. Baltimore Bohemians defeating Icon FC from Montvale, New Jersey, 4-1 in the second round. Ocean City losing to the New York Greek American Atlas, 2-0 at Ocean City. That's a big upset right there. Reading United against Greater Binghamton FC, Bingo for short, 5-2 Reading. And we'll keep on going here. Some other games here, of course, as we can't, you know, fantastic stuff. Charleston Battery defeating the Panama City Pirates by a final of 4-0. And just some great games here, fantastic games going on here. And don't forget, you can listen to these review shows here at blogtalkradio.com/Four Years Teams Fire, where every U.S. Open Cup round being played will be having these review shows on Fridays now. And, of course, the draw for the fourth round pairings, and that's where MLS gets involved. We won't worry about that right now because even though it has come out, we won't worry about that right now because obviously we've got a lot of things to talk about here. But I got to tell you, folks, it's just been a great time, great, great stuff going on. I'm telling you right now, the U.S. Open Cup has gotten bigger. It's gotten better. It is an absolute fun thing to see when we have this tournament growing at the way it is, the way it should be. Look at all these games. It's unbelievable. We started off in the first round with 8 games, 16 teams. And now the second round, 24 games, all with the amateurs. Second round coming in, the USL Pro League, our third division clubs coming in to face some of these top teams in the amateur level, and of course one or two affiliated with an MLS side or with the USL side. And then in the third round, the NASL comes in. We've got some great matches to review before the show ends. We'll definitely get to it as soon as possible. But you just have to say, this has been unbelievable, great action all over the place. Already, 2 matches in extra time that have finished. 3 matches, if you want to count the round one, 3 matches in extra time it finished. 3 matches it ended in the round of penalties. What's going to happen in the third round of the U.S. Open Cup? We don't know. I don't know, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, I got great guests for you tonight. We're going to have Mr. Bob Larson. He was at Newark to see the Jersey Express taking on the Brooklyn Italians. And then we have head coach of Chattanooga FC's Bill Elliott joining us. Head coach of Arizona United, Michael Della Russo, will be joining us. And there is an inside joke on that, I promise you. Because if you're on the East Coast and you hear those radio commercials, we'll get to that in a minute. My good friend, the Soccer Observer, Ian Thompson, who is over in Pittsburgh at Highmark Stadium to see the Riverhounds taking on the Red Bulls under-23 squad. And right now, coming on, joining me to discuss you would have to say an interesting match between a former member of the USL Second Division League when USL was running everything in the lower levels. You have great, great team like Western Mass Pioneers, the Rochester Rhinos, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, when, you know, those two sides, when they get together, you know, a lot of excitement there. Maybe not so much depending on, you know, how you do it. But you just got to say, you just have to say a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. And joining us right now, who is over at Salem Stadium in Rochester, New York, Brendan Doherty. Brendan, good evening, and how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, doing very well. Well, you know, you've made it well known that the Rhinos haven't been like they used to. They were always a solid second division side, and right now in the third division of the in the USL Pro League, against probably a very tough opponent in Western Mass that used to be at least in third division. Now they're considered in the PDL. So they must have came out really ready to try to knock off the Rhinos if they could.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a club that's been around for a while, since the late 90s. And Ray, as you said, they used to be a professional side. So, I mean, there's that pedigree within the club. They know how to get it done against, you know, professional sides, or even, you know, sides who, you know, would be expected to beat them. The team that head coach of the Rhinos, Bob Lilly, put out was kind of a makeshift team. Over the weekend in the match against Orlando, club captain Tyler Rosenlund went out with a leg injury in the first half. So, mm-hmm. Another starter in central midfield left that game with a bit of a foot-toe injury that match of the weekend, too. So you have your two mm-hmm. starting central midfielders both out for this game. So that kind of threw the whole lineup, kind of threw a wrench in those plans. But, no, it was definitely an interesting game to watch. It took I think, 114 minutes for the first goal, but by the end of the game, it was worth it, all 120 minutes of the game.
Obviously, nothing happened in regulation, and obviously I do follow your tweets, and you were really agonizing why is this going into extra time. But that's where all the action was. So I believe, did Rochester put it in first, or was it in Western Mass?
Rochester scored first and then scored again 3 minutes later. And then I guess after that, the players kind of shut off because you've been working hard for 118 minutes. I guess it's really mm-hmm. hard to keep your focus for that final 2 minutes. And that's when Western Mass Pioneers were able to score pretty relatively easily on a quick break chance.
Yeah, that's how it always happens. And you never know. I mean, you think you got it in the bag and you think it's all over, just coasting into the final moments of extra time in the second half. And then when you get to stoppage time, you just got to play a little defense and keep that ball out. But William Daniels from Western Mass had other ideas. And, of course, once again, it's all hands on deck. For how many minutes of stoppage time was added in the second half of extra time?
Second half of extra time? Mm-hmm. I think 10 seconds. At that point, it was 2-1, and everybody seemed pretty content with that result. At least the players on the field. The referee, I don't know, just wanted to get out of there before it started raining again. I did find it really interesting, though. If you look at, like, professional games in Champions League or international play that go past regulation, you see players mm-hmm. go down with cramp almost immediately into extra time because your body is conditioned to play a 90-minute game. And you had these players from Western Mass Pioneers. Their PDL season hadn't started yet. I think their first PDL game is tonight.
Right.
So they had only played one competitive game, their U.S. Open Cup game the previous week, and then they had an exhibition game against another local Massachusetts team. but they hadn't played their – they hadn't started their league game or their league campaign yet. A lot of their guys from the college colleges around Massachusetts weren't part of the team yet. And yet these players were still able to not only perform for 90 minutes, but to perform at a high physical level against the professional side for 120 minutes. And I think that's really admirable, and I think that is kind of the allure of the Cup, at least in an American context.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You know, I know 1999 is it's such a long time ago, obviously. It's been probably almost 15 years since Rochester became the first lower-level side to defeat an MLS team to win the Open Cup, and, of course, that was on ESPN. Mm-hmm. At Crew Stadium against the Colorado Rapids. Obviously, the Richmond Kickers did it back in 95, but that was before MLS came along until DC United beat Rochester in 96. I just have to ask, is there still – when you talk about the Open Cup in Rochester, does 1999 always come back in the town? I mean, I know you got minor league hockey, you got minor league baseball, but still, though – when you talk about defeating an MLS team back in 1999 in Rochester, New York, does it mean anything? Does it, like, great memories that pop up? Do you still have the videotape of it?
Oh, yeah. The soccer guys know that. They have their own bootleg VHS copy of it, you know. It's like people who toured Dave Matthews Band or Fish, they have all their, you know, 40 or 50 live tapes. You know, people in Rochester have their own VHS copy of that game. But I mean, in the general sports population, I don't think it has that same appeal. But to soccer fans, it definitely does. And in Open Cup season, you know, about this time of the year, it's always like the second thing to come off of people's lips. But what's interesting is that even in 1999, when the Rhinos beat three MLS sides before they lifted the trophy, they still had to go to overtime to beat their first round opponent.
And so, who was their first round opponent back then?
I don't remember.
That's
I was 8 years old at the time. But I mean, even getting pushed to the end of extra time in the first round doesn't necessarily mean that the Rhinos can't go on and beat MLS sides, because that's happened before. But then in the other respect, you know, the team hasn't necessarily shown the performances to vanquish all of the demons from last season, which was the worst season in franchise history. The results are there this year, but not necessarily the barnstorming result or barnstorming performances that we'd like to see.
Absolutely, of course. The guys that scored your goals, obviously, it's. In the first goal, Aquilis Levi Huapau, coming from, I believe, DC United originally, probably from their youth academy. How has he been so far this season? Because he got the first goal.
Yeah. He got drafted by Philadelphia, but he had trained with a DC United youth team because he's from the DC area. He only recently signed with the team about 2 weeks ago, I'd say. Maybe a week and a half ago. He had been training with the team for a couple weeks before that. He's, you know, one of many versatile attacking midfield/forward players. He played in the Cup game as the farthest forward in a 4-3-3, which kind of shifted to a 4-2-3-1. He's still trying to figure out what his best role is for the team. I think that's what the coaching staff is trying to figure out as well. The goal that he scored, it was a poacher's goal, really. There's a cross in, there's a header, the keeper went down to save it, there's a rebound, the rebound was partially blocked, and then Levi just found himself open in the 6-yard box with an empty net and the ball at his foot. And I think that's one of the occurrences where it really would have been harder for him to miss than to make that. But other than that goal, he had been active all game, making runs inside and outside. So I think there's enough chemistry within the existing attacking players on the Rhinos that it's easier for him to come into the team and to be productive right away than it would be maybe on a different team.
Right. You got a big opponent coming up now here in round three. You're going to be hosting the Reading United AC, PDL side for the Philadelphia Union, obviously. And it's not really your typical PDL squad. I will admit that. I mean, they look like they have their kids ready to go. A lot of talented players in the Reading, northeastern Pennsylvania area. What is it about Reading right now you feel that they could be a little bit of an annoyance maybe, or do you think that Rochester has a great opportunity to advance into the fourth round?
Well, I don't think the Rhinos would ever take a result for granted. But that said, now that we know that the Rhinos, if they win, they'll host DC in the fourth round. If they win in the third round, that kind of adds a little bit more incentive to it. I know Reading has one of the best track records of any PDL club for producing MLS players. I mean, you can just go on their Wikipedia page. They have several players who have actually played for the Rhinos at one point and played against the Rhinos in USL Pro who went through the ranks at Reading United. It's definitely probably going to be a more battle than the match against Western Mass Pioneers. But knowing Bob Lilly, he's not going to let the players, take it easy on the guys just because they're amateur or college-age guys. He's going to prepare just as hard, if not harder, than he would for any league game in USL Pro.
Oh, absolutely. I don't blame you at all. I don't blame him at all either because, you know, this is where at the moment the David and Goliath matchup, you got the PDL just below USL Pro League. As Reading has done some damage in the past, they've stuttered a bit here and there when you get to the later rounds. But still, though, Reading's a very tough opponent. They're well coached. Absolutely, you don't want to take them for granted. But let me just say this. Because we all know that there are times when in a regular season in your league, it's always, or not always, but if results don't go your way, you try to latch on to this Open Cup season, and at the moment you've gone from round two to round three. If Rochester makes another trip like they did in 1999, how do you think the feeling will be over in the upstate city of Rochester?
I mean, there's no secret that fan interest in, like, the general sports population has waned since, you know, the good old days, the golden years in 1999 and 2000, 2001, 2002, and the move away from Frontier Field to what's now called Salem Stadium. It was supposed to be a boon, and it hasn't really turned out that way. I don't see any way that a deep run in the Open Cup would hurt the Rhinos' popularity up here. So, yeah, I think that could definitely do a lot to change the perception that, the ship has sailed for the Rhinos. You know, even if you're not in MLS, you can still attract good players. You can still play good soccer. And I think that's what the Rhinos want to do, and that's what Bob Lilly has a track record of doing, not only in this city, but at the other teams that he's coached.
Absolutely. Brendan, congratulations on the second-round victory. Good luck against Reading in the third round. I'll definitely be following your tweets. I'm assuming this match might be streamed since Rochester's at home.
Yeah, I got worried that just like the second round game, the third round game will not be streamed.
Oh, no.
But I also got – this was – I talked to somebody in the club on Wednesday night, and he said that if the Rhinos were able to host a potential fourth round game, that game would be streamed. So.
All right. All right. Well, listen, good luck in 2 weeks. Enjoy the evening. Enjoy the victory. Good luck in the league, and I'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, Daniel.
No problem at all. Brendan Doherty, everybody, up in Rochester, New York, as he gives us the great lowdown about the Rhinos as they defeat in extra time Western Mass Pioneers by final of 2-1. My next guest was not available live. He is busy tonight, but we were able to record our segment here. His name is Bob Larson. He is a Red Bull supporter, but he is a photographer, amateur photographer, as he was asked to take some pictures of the Jersey Express of the PDL hosting NPSL's Brooklyn Italians over at NJIT at their soccer stadium. And hopefully for those of you that listen to this program from the New York, New Jersey area, if you were interested in watching that match, even though it's not the New York Red Bulls, you know, to try and head on over there and see what it's all about. I mean, it's a lot of fun and everything. So I had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Bob Larson about his trip to Newark to watch the Jersey Express take on the Brooklyn Italians in the second round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup.
And welcome back, everybody, the U.S. Open Cup Round 2 review show. This is Daniel Feuerstein once again. Joining me is a gentleman who was at Newark's NJIT campus to see the Jersey Express take on the Brooklyn Italians. Bob Larson, Red Bulls fan, but was able to get down there and take some pictures. Bob, thank you for the time and welcome to the show.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem at all. First of all, I'd like to know, how was the atmosphere over at the stadium where NJIT and the Jersey Express, when it's their PDL season, play their games? What's it like in the heart of Newark?
Well, I mean, from the number of fans that showed up, I'd say they had about 70 people in the stands. It was actually a little quiet, oddly, while Jersey was ahead. But the Brooklyn Italian fans seemed to pour around from support in the little corner that they had there up at the bleachers. They turned it on and provided a little bit of atmosphere in the second half. Other than that, you know, the only difficult thing was I didn't know where to park, but it was my first time there. I'm sure that as I go cover more games down there, I'll be a little more familiar with the surroundings and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And once again, you said it was a 1-0 lead for the Jersey Express in the 13th minute. Marcus Hackett gave Jersey Express the lead, and Brooklyn must have been frustrated because towards the end of the first half, two of their guys get booked to get to halftime, Martin Williams of Brooklyn Italians, Rick Milano. But you have to say, did Jersey look pretty good in the first half? Were they holding their own?
Yeah, I mean, the first 10 or 15 minutes of play, actually, Brooklyn was holding the ball well at midfield, but they weren't creating any chances. They weren't getting it really into the 18 and creating any chances. And then after the 15 minutes, until like maybe the 49th, 50th minute, New Jersey Express had to run a play. You know, at first they were countering, and then they started the whole possession,
mm-hmm.
and then they were working the ball for the back, for the midfield and all the way up front. So, and they were playing both games. They were doing both the counterattack, and then later on in the game they were doing a possession game. So, I, you know, knowing my first Express game, didn't know what to expect, but I've heard a lot of stories about the Brooklyn Italians. So, I kind of went in with a bias thinking that, you know, Brooklyn was going to control the game from the get-go, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Brooklyn comes up to equalize in the 50th minute, then Jersey Express comes out of the blue and gets the lead back in the 63rd, and it just looked like maybe Jersey was going to put on some sort of, I wouldn't say it would be an upset, but the Brooklyn Italians are one of those teams back in the day where they have won their share of U.S. Open Cup championships. I believe they have three already, and of course their last one was back former Metro star Giovanni Savarese, I think, was a part of the club for Brooklyn, but still, it felt like the Express was going to find a way to make an upset here if they could.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at the end result, having, you know, watched, you know, the first 60 minutes or so, especially once Jersey came back. I thought that they were gonna actually do it, but I think the Express lacked enough fitness to go to full 90 at least. Because what ended up happening is, you know, at that point, instead of holding the ball and being able to control the game, all of a sudden there were peaks and valleys in their game. So I think what was happening is they would, you know, they'd get tired, and then they'd get a burst again of energy, and they'd play well for a while, and then they'd get tired again. So the rest of the game until about the 80th minute, they were up and down. And then once the 80th minute, except for a couple pushes towards the end, like in the last 5 minutes, Brooklyn really controlled the game at that point.
Yeah, definitely. And it looked like Brooklyn finally broke out late. Obviously, they leveled the match in the 76th minute by Salvatore Barone on a penalty. And then in the 81st minute, Kareem Yochim made it 3-2 Brooklyn in the 81st. And then, of course, the second penalty was awarded to Brooklyn in the 90th, and Guerrero converted. And that was it. Brooklyn defeats Jersey Express by final of 4-2. You know, we always talk about these Open Cup games. You know, obviously they're not on the through the internet. You know, there's sometimes there'll be some teams with a stream, but if you're there, it must be interesting. I know you've probably seen a couple of Red Bull games at Red Bull Arena, or you know, when they have their Open Cup games. What's it like to be in a like a small college field to just see? You know, this is the 101st tournament of the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah, I mean, from a photography standpoint, I wish the lighting was better, but that's part and parcel of any college venue for the most part. So, it's a very nice venue because there's plenty of seating. I believe they have sprint turf there, but not sure. I'm almost positive it's sprint turf. As far as turf goes, it was a good pitch. The facilities, it's pretty good. I got to go into the locker room a little bit before and after the game. That was a nice change of pace too. You know, I'm sure some of these teams don't really get that full effect. You know, having a nice locker room and every place to change into. Sure, it doesn't compare to like the locker room at Red Bull Arena, Florida, but you know, they get to work their way up to that as they move on through the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I got to say, now obviously Brooklyn, Brooklyn will be in the third round and they'll be going to Queens over where St. John's is at Belson Stadium. They're going to take on the New York Cosmos. My question to you is this. Will you make the trip over to Queens to take a look, or are you just going to wait for the fourth round when the Red Bulls get their opponents selected to them?
I don't know. I got to check the combination of things. I got to check my schedule and stuff like that. So I'm not sure yet if I'm going to make it or not. But that game would be an interesting one to watch. So if I could make it out there, I definitely would like to. Whether I'm shooting it, you know, from a photography standpoint, covering it for somebody, or just going out there as a fan. If I'm free, I would definitely like to check that game out.
Yeah, it would be cool. How long have you been a photographer? I mean, is this just a hobby, or do you have a business running photography to take as, you know, whether it be for fun or you take pictures for magazines or for newspapers?
I did some photography back in high school, but you know, not a lot. But I was doing it then, you know, kind of fell out of it in college. You know, we all have so many things going on in college. And I got back into it a couple of years ago because my daughter got into it, and I saw her taking pictures, and I was like, hey, I want to do that again. So I went out and got a camera, and I started buying equipment up and stuff like that. I still consider myself an amateur. I don't have a business yet. I have a name and things of that nature, but I haven't gone forth and really done anything with it yet. So... we'll see. I'm hoping to do some work for, like in a rec league, especially. You know, kids go to travel tournaments, and there's always photographers there. With a lot of people, a good staff and a lot of equipment. You know, these kids get pictures. If the mom and dad and the kids that don't play travel and stuff, yeah, they don't often get pictures of their kids. So, I was covering my son's game. I actually had a quite a few offers for the parents to buy the pictures that they're taking, but like I told them, I'm not going to charge you for pictures of games, my own son's game, for God's sake. But that was the impetus of me thinking about starting to do that.
Yeah, I hear you. And that sounds pretty cool. So I mean, it sounds like it was a great time, great atmosphere, even though there wasn't many people in the seats, but it sounds like the people that came over from Brooklyn really brought the ruckus, and they move on to the third round as they'll be visiting the New York Cosmos over at St. John's in Queens in New York, and just a lot of history with this Open Cup, sir. There's a lot of history with this Open Cup and a lot of hopes and dreams that could either come to fruition or it could just become a real nightmare.
Exactly. Post-game, when I was in the locker room real quick for a minute, I said to one of the Brooklyn Italian players, like, so you're going to get to play the Cosmos, huh? And he like, looked at me, and he's got this big grin. You could tell, you know, the dream is already there. And I'm like, that's pretty cool, isn't it? He's like, yeah, that's way cool.
Well, Bob, listen, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. Have a good evening, and hope to see you if the Red Bulls do get to play at home for their fourth round match. Hopefully I'll see you at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's something that's going to keep me from that game. I definitely want to see the game at Red Bull Arena, so it should be an interesting match. No matter who moves forward, Cosmos or Brooklyn, if we end up getting one of those guys to draw.
Yep, absolutely. All right, take care, and thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Bob Larson, who was over at Newark at NJIT's soccer stadium as we were discussing the second round victory by the Brooklyn Italians over the Jersey Express. Once again, Brooklyn Italians in the NPSL, Jersey Express in the PDL. So it's going to be very interesting to see what is going to happen. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, I got to tell you, when you talk about these games in the Open Cup, and you're talking about these games where it's basically a little nobody that was able to, become big, because this is the second round. You know, we're up here, boys. I mean, this is a big thing. When you're talking about two teams that probably most don't know, one is of course, the Brooklyn Italians, they are, former U.S. Open Cup champions, as they won it back in the day, back in 1991, after AAC Eagles won it in 1990. Brooklyn Italians won it in 1991. And I do understand they might have two, because they might have been the Brooklyn Dodgers SC at the time, but I could be wrong about that, so don't really hold me to that. But as we talk about this, these games, it's interesting, it's fun, it's exciting, because you get to see these teams that you rarely see or you talk about. And to see these teams that were at the time these top clubs before MLS came around. And let's not forget, the original North American Soccer League that was here never, ever was a part of it either until last year. So it's always great to talk about when you have these clubs coming in that used to be, one-time winners, two-time winners, four-time winners, five-time winners, how many times they've won it. It's fantastic to talk about, and it's really exciting when you talk about these teams in the lower levels that have their opportunities to take on the big boys in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And one of those teams that took out Wilmington Hammerheads from North Carolina in their stadium, of course, I'm talking about the head coach of Chattanooga FC down in the NPSL. I have Mr. Bill Elliott with me. Coach, thank you for the time. Welcome to the show, and congratulations.
Thank you. No problem. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on. And I have to tell you, this is a type of matchup where you're going up against probably one of the top and tough sides in the professional levels of U.S. soccer, as well as their head coach in Bill Irving, who has done so much for the town of Wilmington in North Carolina. What was it like just to match up wits with this legend originally from England?
Yeah, it was a great experience for me as a coach, even though I've been coaching 25 years and It was a great experience, certainly for our players. Many of them obviously desire to be at that level, so it was terrific. We were excited when we learned about having being able to host the match. We thought that would be that gave us incentive maybe to push a little bit more than we would have been able to on the road.
Absolutely. Talk about your boy, Luke Winter. My God, he was on a tear in this game. Even though he got booked in the 30th minute, he got himself a brace in the 21st and the 61st minute. How many years has Luke been with Chattanooga? And, what's his future like?
I think, it's been great. He's been with us since his third year. He's came in the first year when I was coaching here, my third year with the team as well. And, he's been scoring goals. The first couple of games, we thought he came to us as we were told, a holding midfield player. But after about 2 weeks of practice and just seeing him score goals in practice, everything we did, he hit the back of the net, and we made the change with him, and he's been brilliant. I mean, he went on an absolute tear that year and really hasn't stopped scoring goals since.
That's amazing. That's wonderful to hear about. Now, obviously, there's some good fortune on Chattanooga's side. Wilmington got a player sent off inside first half stoppage time. And, of course, when that happens, good things come to those that are still up a man. And you got that – even though Luke got that second goal in the 61st, Chris Ochening was able to get finally that final nail in the coffin in second half stoppage time.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helped. What it did, it evened the game out, because the thing they had over us, they're a professional team. They've been in camp together for 2 months. They played four or five games together. We are a team that's been together for 1 week. So it was huge that having a man sent off, we were fine early in the game, and I think we were having the better of the play, to be honest. However, I think the professional fitness would have shown through in the end had they not had a player sent off, but they did, and we were quite happy to take advantage of the man up and try to do what we needed to do.
Oh, absolutely, and that is moving on to the third round of the Open Cup. And before we talk about that matchup, talk about your conference. Obviously, you got the Silverbacks reserves. You got the Georgia Revolution, Knoxville Force, Nashville FC. They're an interesting story, of course. New Orleans Jesters, Pensacola City FC, and Rocket City United. How tough is this conference in the Southeast that Chattanooga is involved with, and is it just as rough and tough as these other divisions or conferences in the NPSL?
Yeah, I think it's very rough and tough. I mean, in our region, a lot of the top college players have gravitated towards the NPSL and away from the PDL for various reasons. One, I think a lot of the NPSL teams are starting to run their programs similar to the top PDL franchises, where they house players and help them find jobs and things like that. But two, some of the college coaches, at least in our region, you play less games in the NPSL. Now it's, 16 maybe in the PDL, but 12 or so in the NPSL, unless you make the playoffs. And I think, college coaches kind of like the idea that, hey, they're playing, but they're not playing as many games. So there's a lot of good players in our region.
So do you tap into, like, the local Chattanooga College or somewhere around the state of Tennessee? Do you get any top players, like, maybe from in the region, like from maybe Georgia Tech, University of Florida, Florida State? How many kids do you come over to play for Chattanooga FC that, they might not get an opportunity for at least healthy competition, let's put it?
Well, we've got a number of players from big schools, Clemson, University of Memphis, places like that. But we also have, and our bread and butter has been guys that are top players at NAI and Division II schools, and recruiting those guys in, finding the right guys. And, when you put a collection of those players together, I think we've been able to show those guys can play, just as well as the guys from the bigger schools. And that's basically how we've done it.
That's fantastic to hear. How does it feel to be the first club in the NPSL to defeat a professional side in the U.S. Open Cup? Because this is the – for as many chances as these teams have had, Chattanooga finally gets that first bite at the apple.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome for our franchise. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Chattanooga is a really unique place. I've traveled the world. I've traveled the country with soccer. And the board and the way they've set up the franchise and the team and the general manager, I mean, to be we're run probably better than most professional teams or better than a lot of lower-end professional teams for sure in terms of the organization. It shows through in the fan support. I mean, we get 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 fans at a game and don't blink an eye about it. And not only that, the fans are there. You know, we have their own fan group, the Chattahooligans. They're there 6 hours before tailgating, cooking out in the parking lot, and then they come in beating their drums and making noise and singing, and they don't stop until the game ends. And so, and as they're rain or shine, they follow us on the road. So what Chattanooga as an organization, as a city, has done and gotten the way they've gotten behind soccer was just, I think, the game the other night and what the players achieved was just a reflection of the kind of support we have around here, which has been just really an anomaly for a market our size and just amazing.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. And not to put any words in your mouth or anything like that, but is there any desire for Chattanooga FC to try to create their own stadium? I know you're probably practicing at or you're playing at the local high school stadium or the college stadium over there. Is there any desire to maybe move up into the professional levels and possibly building your own stadium? Is that somewhere in the future, or you're just happy to be where you are right now?
Well, our stadium is Finley Stadium, which is in downtown Chattanooga. Finley Stadium is where University of Chattanooga plays their college football match games. And it's a smaller stadium in terms of college football stadium, so it's really pretty nice. It fits our team really well. No unfortunate thing at the moment is there's football lines on the field, but that is something that we believe will be resolved by next year. We'll be able to play in Finley Stadium, continue to play in there, but not have all the football lines that are there now in the way. They're going to redo the surface. And it's really a great environment. You know, we have our own beer. You know, the local brewery brews a special beer for the Chattahooligans named after our fans. And we have food trucks in the stadium. And the environment they create is just unbelievable. Now, as far as moving up and moving on into a professional type of setting, a full-blown, I mean, I would be the wrong one to ask that. That would be a question mm-hmm. for the general manager of the board. But we're real happy to be in Finley Stadium in downtown Chattanooga. We think it's a great venue.
That's fantastic to hear. Let me write this down. Chattahooligan beer. Okay, I'm going to have to ask for a chance.
Chattahooligan ale.
Oh, okay. I might have to sample something if I get down there one day. I would love to get down there one day. Actually, the funny thing was this. I was not to make fun of the situation, but, of course, you probably know that old song, the Chattanooga Choo Choo. I was going to probably play
yeah.
that when you were going to come on, but I didn't have the time to do it. So I didn't. but it's just great to hear. You know, you're going to be hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks in the third round on May 28th, and you're going to go up against definitely a legend in American soccer circles, former national team forward Eric Winalda, and his Atlanta Silverbacks. I know you play against his reserves, but you're going up against the big boys now, and you're going up against Eric Winalda. What type of challenge will that be when you face him and his Silverbacks?
Well, you know, the good news, I think the good news for Chattanooga is, as far as I know, Eric Winalda's not playing. So that's going to be a plus for us, I think. We know how good they are. We know the Silverbacks have a great franchise. The NASL is just, I've been really impressed with what they've done over the past couple of years in that league. And, you know, we give them all due respect. And at the same time, we're gonna put a game plan together just like we did the other night and go with the same approach. I mean, you play the games for a reason, and you see it. the FA Cup in England. You see it around our country. You see it in various sports where, you know, a team that maybe not quite as talented comes away with a win. And so there's a reason we have to play the games, and we hope that we can continue to be a thorn in these teams' sides.
Yep, that's the idea. That is the big idea right there. And moving on into the fourth round of the Open Cup would also be a big-time moment for this club in the NPSL. And who knows, maybe good fortune will still be on you when you're in this competition going forward into the next round. It would be something. You know, Eric Winalda, once again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, obviously, but, you know, he took Cal FC. He took Cal FC into a magic run about a year or two ago, getting eliminated in the fourth round by the Seattle Sounders. Now, I haven't really taken a look at the draw, who might be your opponent for round four, but just what would it mean for this club and for the people in Chattanooga if this side does beat the Silverbacks and you move on into the fourth round?
Well, I mean, we've seen the draw today where the winner of Atlanta and Chattanooga will play at home against Real Salt Lake. So, I mean, what would that mean? I mean, that'd be unbelievable. It's something that, you know, I was born and raised in Chattanooga, grew up playing here. When I graduated high school, you couldn't even get a game on TV here. To think that the city and the franchise is one game away from hosting one of the top teams in Major League Soccer, it's just, I can't even believe it, you know. And so I think, regardless, if we come out on top and the Silverbacks come out on top, having Real Salt Lake come to Atlanta or come to Chattanooga is going to be an amazing thing for either of the franchises.
Oh, absolutely. This would be a major, major feather in the cap, not just for the club but for the city of Chattanooga. And obviously, I'm not trying to pick sides, but personally, I'll be rooting for you. So let's hope and let's just hope that you know, some good luck comes your way, and you can get to that fourth round. We'll see what happens. But obviously, Coach Elliott, congratulations on the victory against Wilmington. Good luck in round three against the Atlanta Silverbacks senior side. And just continued success in the NPSL. Congratulations, and I'll talk to you next time, hopefully.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me on.
Not a problem at all. And that is head coach Bill Elliott from the Chattanooga FC Club in the NPSL as we continue here on the Four Eastern Fire American Soccer Show talking about this U.S. Open Cup. Now, let me just say this. At the moment, there is no guest scheduled here. I wanted to bring over North Texas Rayados that used to be in the NPSL. They've relegated themselves to a lower division that's affiliated with North Texas in the U.S. ASA third region, I should say, as they took on the Austin Aztecs. Unfortunately, we're not able to get them to be on the show. But I just want to say, as we're talking about this, you know, when you see these sides are going at it hard-nosed, and I'm not kidding, this was hard-nosed awesomeness going up and down, left and right, back and forth. When you're talking about this type of match that gets a goal on each side in the first half, two more goals for each side in the second half, and then after regulation, you're going into extra time. Austin had a player sent off in extra time, and then all of a sudden, here comes North Texas with a goal in the 117th minute in the second half of extra time. And then Austin Aztecs, they pull out an equalizer three just at the tip, at the stroke of extra time, or excuse me, of stoppage time in second half extra time, to force penalties. North Texas converts all four, while Austin loses two of the four that were not converted. And at the end of the day, at the end of all the shouting, North Texas Rayados advances into the next round as they will be on the road against the San Antonio Scorpions. That's going to be a big time game for everyone to watch. It's going to be awesome. I know it's going to be great, and we'll see what happens as we discuss the preview for the third round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup as we get closer to the end of the show. You also have to say, while it was interesting to see these types of games, we've had two blowouts, absolutely. Not so much it's 4-0 like what Harrisburg did to Lehigh Valley, nothing, or what Des Moines Menace's under-23 side did against Real Colorado with a 3-0. We're talking about one side pouring it on like there was no tomorrow. And I'm talking about the match that was the stream of the round by U.S. Soccer, as they had RVA FC, Richmond, Virginia FC of the NPSL, hosting and taking on the Richmond Kickers of the USL Pro League, and it was no competition whatsoever. Great goal, obviously, 26th minute by Samuel Asante, made it 1-0 Richmond. Shea Spitz made it 2-0 Richmond Kickers. Jason Yeisley, who converted a great goal in first half stoppage time, as the shot was taken from distance. It was popped up by the keeper, and then he missed it. RVA keeper missed it. It bounced right behind him. Here comes Yeisley as he converts it to make it 3-0. And even though there was a booking on Zach Carroll in the 57th minute, Tishon Hanley converted two goals, 4-0. Johnny Orlando from RVA made it 4-1, but it really was over by then. Hanley on the outside of Orlando's goal, Hanley made it 5-0 in the 64th minute, and George Davis IV made it officially 6-1. 6-1, Richmond Kickers as they move on. Once in a while, you're going to get a blowout, and when you saw that scoreline, it was unbelievable. But what happens next? Well, later on in the evening, the LA Galaxy's two squad in the USL Pro League, they also took, or shall I say, gave a beating to Cal FC. Covarrubias in the 6th minute, Bradley Diallo in the 24th, Travis Bowen with a brace, 30th and 33rd, didn't get the guy who scored in the 45th minute, but Djokovic in the 82nd minute made it 6-1 against Cal FC. Of course, Cal FC pulled one back. Didn't really matter anyway, because the LA Galaxy 2 squad advances into round 3. And those are the types of games that you see that are absolutely incredible, what to watch for and everything. And, you know, I was talking to Frankie DeVias. We talk about the Sacramento Republic, because even though they are USL Pro League, Ventura County is PDL. The truth is Sacramento is an expansion side. So you don't know in this case if Sacramento was going to be able to keep up the reputation for USL Pro to advance into the next round. Well, Jordan Rideout made it difficult in the 36th minute and made it 1-0. And then you get into the second half. Harrison Delbridge made it 1-1 in the 59th minute. Couple of bookings here and there, obviously. Jordan Vale, Mickey Daly getting involved in the 76th minute each. Dakota Collins, 2 minutes later, puts in the go-ahead goal. And then basically Ventura, out of frustration, Javon Torre Howell, he not only gets a booking in the 88th minute, he probably kicked the ball or threw the ball at the referee in the next couple of seconds, and he earned another yellow card, with another yellow card which became red, and that sent him off. Ventura went down. Ventura County Fusion went down to 10 men at the 88th minute. To be honest with you, there was nothing more to be done in that game anyway. Sacramento Republic earns their first ever victory in the U.S. Open Cup, and that's pretty cool when you see that. So congratulations to everyone in Sacramento, especially Frankie DeVille, who covers Sacramento Republic for Soccer News Day. Once again, come to Soccer News Day for all your information on everything going on. I just wrote an article about the U.S. Open Cup once again, as I was able to catch my first ever round one match live in front of me. Laredo Heat defeating the Red Force by final of 2-1. Laredo will be heading to Florida to take on the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. And, you know, when you're talking about players that used to be in this Open Cup, like Jimmy Nielsen, who played for Sporting Kansas City this past last year, he wins the MLS Cup championship. The year before, wins the U.S. Open Cup championship, and now he's a head coach for Oklahoma City FC for the Energy. And it was a 2-0 victory. David Lechte in the 10th minute, then Peter Karinji made it 2 in the 69th. You're seeing a player that's already played now coaching, and it's just, you know, just fantastic to discuss and to read, you know, how these players now move into the coaching ranks and how, you know, it's not an MLSI, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's just one of those things where you're going to have players moving into the coaching ranks as we discuss these great things going on. Charleston Battery, once again, they took on the PDLSI, the Panama City Beach Pirates, and it was all Charleston. Mikhail Chang with the opening goal in the 4th minute, and then a hat trick by Javier Cordovez got his tallies, 16th, 25th, and 50th minutes. Panama City had nothing on Charleston, and that would be the end of it. And Charleston Battery, once again, always a MLS killer in these Open Cup tournaments. So they move ahead, and they go into the next round, as they will be home in the next round with their opponents. And as we keep talking about these great games that's been happening, of course, Orlando City in their final year in the USL Pro League. Corey Herzog gets a brace in the 13th and 43rd minute. That second goal was a penalty. Dennis Chin also gets a brace in the 27th and 82nd minute. Ocala Stampede pulls one back from Ben Knight. No, that's not our friend Ben Knight up in Toronto. But definitely Orlando City meaning business in the Open Cup, and it should be interesting to see what's going to happen when they take on their next opponent in the U.S. Open Cup third round. Ocean City Nor'easters, normally a very tough opponent. They take on the New York Greek Atlas, or at the time they used to be New York Greek Americans. You know, this is another team that has won the Open Cup before, obviously. They have done a lot of big things, obviously. Greek American Atlas, 67, 68, 69. You know, they've won it 3 in a row back in the day. And they represented the New York area very well, in Queens and Long Island and places in Brooklyn as well. You know, this is one of those things that you see that, you know, these are guys that are really, really tough and really hard to handle. So it's definitely going to be a challenge when you face some of these legacy teams back in the day when they were winning Open Cups left and right. And as we continue on here, Reading United, facing the Greater Binghamton FC side, and boy, oh boy, let me tell you something. This was a hell of a match. Even though it wasn't streamed, you know, you're following it on Twitter when you have these types of games where you have Reading, who's always been a powerhouse in the PDL, and they face a team in the NPSL from Binghamton, New York. It was back and forth. Umar Balo, 18th minute, 1-0, Reading. 35th minute was from Alex Varkatsis that equalized. 44th minute, Darius Madison made it 2-1 before halftime whistle blew. Beginning of the second half, Jelovic on a penalty converts in the 55th minute, but then Reading was just too much for Binghamton. Darius Madison with a brace in the 63rd. Skylar Thomas making it 4-2 for Reading, and then Surkamp with the final nail in the coffin to make it 5-2 Reading in the 85th minute. So obviously Reading always being a powerhouse in these U.S. Open Cup tournaments. I saw them last year in the third round against the New York Red Bulls. Gave the Red Bulls fits, but the Red Bulls finally broke through in the second half to make it 2-0, and they won it in the third round last year when then they faced New England Revolution on the road up in Harvard University's AstroTurf field, shall we say. So very interesting stuff as we keep going here. You know, once again, this is a great tournament. You know, obviously there's a lot of magic. David versus Goliath, every single time you have these opportunities for these lower-level teams, And, of course, some of you are going to, or most of you, if you are fans of these types of tournaments, are going to watch the FA Cup final on Fox's national channel, Arsenal against Hull. And usually you're thinking Arsenal's a top opponent, and they're not going to allow Hull to beat them. But you never know when you get to the final. Look what happened when Wigan took out Manchester City in the FA Cup final last year, even though they got relegated at the end of the season. And you got to say, at the same time, it's going to be very, very interesting on how this stuff is going to be. So, once again, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun when you're going to watch these games. And, of course, it'll be in 2 weeks. How is it? How, unbelievable. We're going to have a break. Isn't that amazing? We're going to have a break, finally, in these early rounds of the U.S. Open Cup. It's just absolutely wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind going back to back to back once in a while, but, you know, there's got to be some form of separation because you need the clubs that are going to be hosting these games to be allowed to promote them so they can bring the people over. It's going to be absolutely fantastic to finally take a break. Let us promote these games the right way. Let the fans that are going to be able to come on the road to these games to allow them to finally just have the opportunity to tell their bosses, I'm taking a break here, I'm taking a break there because I'm going to be away, and then off you go. Off you go to these games. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be wonderful. I'm telling you, it's just been absolutely incredible on how these games have now taken place. Once again, U.S. Soccer is doing a great job. The Open Cup Committee has been doing a fantastic job of understanding that there needs to be an opportunity to go out and to give some breaks in between rounds, and we can just finally have some fun, finally relax. And I know they didn't do it for the fans, but if you think about it, for the fans, now you can go out and you can plan accordingly when to come over, when to go on the road when your team is in the Open Cup, either it's within your region, out of state, out of area, however you want to do it. It's absolutely a lot of fun now. And once again, just as I discussed about the negatives with the whole situation with the San Diego Flash, these are the positives that you need to make this tournament grow into the proper way. You have this tournament, let it grow the proper way, and then everything will come together. That is why you try to do the Open Cup right. And once again, more teams are coming in MLS. More teams are coming in the NASL, in the USL Pro League. So it's always going to be one of those types of moments where you really need to have this type of separation to make this tournament bigger and better. You see it all the time when you're watching these tournaments, these FA Cup tournaments like on Fox Sports 1 or the BN Sports or the Gold TV, you know, or if you go on ESPN 3 and you watch what goes on in France and Germany and the Netherlands, you know, these Dutch Cups, French Cups, FA Cup, U.S. Open Cup, it's the same thing. There's got to be some form of separation. There's got to be some form of relaxing that only helps the clubs make it better. It helps with the supporters going on the road better. It just makes it better. And this was a great opportunity for these teams in the U.S. Open Cup to make it better, to have it promoted better, to make it stronger. And you just got to say it's going to be an absolute fun time to do it. And as we move on here on the Foyersteins Fire American Soccer Show, a great match that happened in Portland, Oregon as it looked like it was doom and gloom for Arizona United. But here they come back late in the second half. It might have gone to extra time, but no, it didn't. And joining me now is the head coach of the Arizona United, a Mr. Michael De La Russo. Coach De La Russo, thank you for the time and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, before we talk about this match, I don't know if you know this, but there's another gentleman with your exact first and last name here in the East Coast in northeastern New Jersey, and he does LASIK surgery.
I've heard that, actually. And,
oh, you have?
You know, one day I hope I meet him, honestly, because I think he's the only one. It's not a very common name, but, you know, people have looked it up and told me that online before. Some of my friends, I believe, Googled my name or something, and he came up, so.
Yep. Well, let me just tell you, I've heard his commercials too many times on the radio. But so you're not
funny.
Only are you a head coach, not only are you a head coach, you're also a LASIK surgeon as well. Good for you. No.
Awesome. In Jersey, by the way, too.
In Bergenfield, New Jersey. So that's the location. It's in Bergenfield, New Jersey. You ever come over here playing against anyone in the Open Cup or a regular season, you're going to take a trip, I'll show you where the office is. So you can walk in and train on your own.
I appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. You know, obviously this is your first year in the USL Pro League, and you're taking on the Portland Timbers under-23 squad that's in the PBL. Obviously it's the top 23 players or under that the Timbers have. Why were they such a tough nut to crack before you got your first goal in the 84th minute?
Yeah, there's a lot of special players on that team. Personally, coming straight from college, I know a bunch of them. They're guys that should have pretty good professional careers after school. They're a good collection of individuals, and they're motivated. You know, at the end of the day, when you're a college kid looking to make it in the pro game, and you have a chance to step on the field against pros, you're out to prove something. So, you know, they were highly motivated, they were athletic, young, talented. But, you know, at the end of the day, luckily our boys, you know, wore them down. We kept the ball very well. We moved the ball around. We made them work, tired them out, and, you know, we were able to get some goals near the end.
Absolutely. Of course, Kyle Fisher and Matt Rose respectively made it 2-0 Portland under-23s at the half. But talk about your guys, obviously. Kadeem, if I butcher his name, I apologize. Kadeem Dakres, correct?
It's Dakres.
Dakres, thank you very much. He comes out big, pulling one back in the 84th minute to make it 2-1, and it's a game all over again. Talk about how well you've scouted him, or at least found a way to bring him over to be on a professional squad.
Kadeem's a very talented player. I watched him at UMBC. I'm very close with Pete Carinji, the head coach there. He's one of my mentors growing up from the Baltimore area, both from the same area. I've known him for a long time, so I, you know, take his advice to heart. He talked to me about Kadeem, told me about him. I actually saw him play last year for UMBC. He's a very exciting, dynamic player. And I was excited to bring him in. He's done quite well for us. He has a lot to learn still. He's getting used to the professional game. But I think, you know, just his overall athleticism and his raw talent, you know, it's going to give him at least a jump into the professional game. And then, you know, where he goes from there, it's up to him. And he's, you know, he's been exciting. And I know the fans out here like him. And he's been a pleasure to coach. So he had a good game for us. And, you know, he's making strides in the right direction.
And then 4 minutes later, it's London Woodbury who gets the equalizer. And, of course, obviously you must be feeling at that moment, yes, we're going to go into extra time. And we're going to give these kids a run for their money. Talk about how London was able to get open and beat the keeper to make it 2-2.
Yeah, London's a special player. You know, when I saw him before college, he had played a lot for FC Dallas up top and on the outside and then kind of transformed into a defender. But, you know, I've put him back up top, and he's found his way pretty well. He was able to get on a lot in the air. And then he was able to just find gaps in between their center backs, and he did it extremely well on the goal. And he finished it like a class forward, you know, calm and composed. And once we got that, honestly, once we got that goal, I didn't think it was going to go to extra time. Believe it or not, I thought we were going to get another one. We had a lot of momentum. Once we got that first goal, really, I thought we were going to get two more, and luckily enough, we were able to. So.
Absolutely, and you, Daniel Antuez, pulls it off big in second half stoppage time. I'll be honest, you probably have more faith in your players. Not saying I don't have faith in your players, but I just felt that, you know, Woodbury got his goal. You're going to go an extra time. You're going to push it on them, and I thought maybe you're going to pull one out in extra time, but Antuez just does the job in second half stoppage time.
Yeah, I mean, Danny's a great player. He's a great young man, a great story, honestly, too. But he's one guy at the beginning of the game, he promised our GM that he was going to come out here and get a win. So really, it's for him to get the game winner was very special. And these guys deserved it. They played their hearts out. They played very well. They pushed. They possessed the whole game. And for him to get on the end of it, you know, it's a credit to him.
Absolutely. What does it mean for, you know, your fans over – do you play in Phoenix or do you play in Tucson? Where do you located for your home games?
We're just northwest of Phoenix. We're in Peoria, up at the Peoria Sports Complex. So
It's
where the Padres and Mariners play their spring training. So it's a great little facility out here.
Mm-hmm. So talk about those fans. I mean, obviously, they're watching the stream. I mean, you must be getting a lot of tweets, a lot of texts. Friends, family, supporters, just how you're able to just come out of nowhere and pull out this big victory to advance into the third round.
Yeah, they were very excited. We have a great fan base here, La Furia Roja. They're very dedicated. They love the sport. They love the Arizona area, and luckily enough, we were able to give them a team this year. But no, they followed online. They're extremely excited. I know our owner was tweeting as well. He was very excited. So it was a good night for everybody, and it showed a lot of character and a lot of will by our team, and it was good to see.
Oh, it was fantastic to see. And this is why you love these type of competitions. You want to see these teams that come out. And like you've said before, this is your first year in the professional leagues. You're an expansion side right now. Maybe the other side, because even though they are PDL, they have an advantage because they've been around a little longer than your guys were. But you just came up big, and you just went out and did a job just as the clock struck midnight, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It was a lot of hard work. Obviously, it was a big road trip for us because we had just come back from being out east. We played two games, one in Richmond and one in Harrisburg, and then 2 days later we had to play up in Portland. So really it was a lot of, like I said earlier, it was a big character win for our boys. So it was, as a coach, I was, you know, it's one of those things you can't coach. You just have to kind of instill in your boys and hope they run with it, and they did. And they did a great job, and I was very proud.
Absolutely. How do you handle that sort of that workload? I mean, you're going to be on the East Coast for two road games, and you got to come all the way back across the country just to play in an Open Cup game against a side that's in the Northwest. How do you handle that type of a travel schedule?
We manage our bodies. You know, we have good depth on our team. We managed our time in the first two games because we knew every game was going to be important, but same time we wanted to win every single one of them. So it's hard because you have to concentrate on the day and the game that you have that day. But, you know, our guys did well. They recovered really well. Our trainer did a great job. You know, they were mentally in a good spot, and, you know, we used our depth, like I said, and guys were ready to go. And they're all bought in, all 26 of them, so it's good to have because, you know, you never know when your number's going to get called, but these guys are ready to go.
Absolutely. Round three, you'll be hosting your fellow expansion club side in the USL Pro League. Oklahoma City FC Energy is coming over to face Arizona United. They have a winner in head coach Jimmy Nielsen, the former keeper for the Sporting Kansas City side. Had an Open Cup championship 2 years ago, last year MLS Cup championship. What have you seen so far, if you've had any video to watch Jimmy Nielsen's boys with tactics and formations, and what do you expect out of this big round three matchup?
Yeah, Jimmy's done a great job. They're a very organized, efficient team. They have some guys that are veteran pros, and Jimmy's coached them very well. They're extremely organized defensively. We played them first game of the year this year, so we know them pretty well. We're a pretty different team since then, considering we only had five practices before our first game. But that was our first preseason game, first game, even though it counted toward our schedule. So we know them pretty well. Jimmy's done a tremendous job. They haven't gotten the results recently in league that I think they deserve. They've been on the wrong end of a couple games where I think maybe they deserve to win. But it'll be a good matchup for sure. They like to play, which is always nice to play a team that likes to play. And it'll be another good challenge for our boys.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, listen, congratulations on your second-round win against the Portland Timbers under-23 squad. Good luck on May 28th against Oklahoma City Energy. And continue doing what you're doing with Arizona United. Good luck. Congratulations. And I hope to talk to you next time.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time. Take care.
No. Take care. And that's head coach Michael Delarusso. No, not the LASIK surgeon. The head coach of Arizona United FC, as they're going to face a big opponent in their fellow expansion side of Oklahoma City FC Energy. You know, many things were said before the season got underway. It was supposed to be the Phoenix Wolves, the Phoenix FC Wolves, that were going to be continuing on. Certain things fell apart, unfortunately, and you thought the Phoenix area was going to lose their professional side. And I always cringe when it doesn't matter what level, you know, amateur level, professional level, semi-professional level, when a club ceases operations because the game suffers. And we don't want the game to suffer here in the U.S. Now, obviously, if a league falls down, then we're in major trouble, obviously. And that's not what we want to do here. We want to see our clubs and our leagues become very strong. And when you become very strong in this particular way, then you make the national team strong. And then one day, maybe it'll be this summer, maybe it'll be the next 4 years, the next cycle, maybe it's going to be a World Cup championship. We don't know what will happen, but this is why we got to make sure these clubs of ours here in the United States, it doesn't matter, Northeast, Southeast, Midwest, Central, the Plains, Southwest, Northwest, California, Lovin. We don't know what's going to happen in the future, but the truth of the matter is this, is that we need to make sure. We need to make sure that these clubs continue on being strong, being available, you know, keep on producing top talent that will be recognized. And maybe if a certain club in the MLS or in the NASL or in the USL Pro League, they have their youth squads and maybe they're not doing so well, and then these clubs can pick up on what's going on in these lower level clubs to bring them over to their academies and maybe to their first team, then we'll see what happens. But other than that, this is why the game must continue to grow here in the United States of America. Because once again, when you see some of these players that are on display in the U.S. Open Cup, and whether you're able to be there or you're watching a stream of these games, it's going to be fun to watch. And then you can take a look and see, well, you know, I like that guy. Maybe we should give him an opportunity to come up here and to play for our side. You never know these things. You really don't. And this is why these games are so much fun to watch. That's why it's always fun to see these games. Because, like I said before, in my latest article in SoccerNewsDay.com, you know, this is where dreams are made or dreams are crushed, to try and move on to win a championship in a single elimination tournament. And at the same time, who knows if an MLS side is going to get eliminated in the final. The last time that happened, 1999 Open Cup Final, the Rochester Rhinos defeating the Colorado Rapids 2-0 at Columbus Crew Stadium when the finals were at neutral sites, and that match was broadcasted on ESPN. So that is something really special, really exciting, and hopefully we'll see something like that as these as this tournament rolls on and trudges through. Now awaiting a gentleman who was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a gentleman that is Mr. No-Nonsense when it comes to the game in the United States, and even though he's Scottish, the gentleman definitely loves to talk about football in the United States, and that's, of course, the Soccer Observer, Ian Thompson. Ian, thank you for the time, and welcome back.
That's no problem, Daniel. This is what Friday night is for, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Particularly in Scotland.
Absolutely. I mean to ask you this real quick before we move on. Did your club win the Scottish FA Cup or no?
We won the Scottish League Cup in March.
Oh, wonderful.
So yeah, I after a 19-year absence without a trophy, I had to make the trip back to Glasgow to be there. And they tied 0-0 with Inverness, in which was a pretty horrific game. And it went to penalty kicks. And Aberdeen's record on penalty kicks has not been great over the years, but they managed to pull it out.
That's wow. Wow. Good for you. Congratulations. I'm happy for you. Your side in Scotland gets themselves a trophy, and I'm very happy for you, and I really am.
Thank you. I mean, it could have been a better season. Tomorrow is the Scottish Cup final, and we played St Johnstone in the semi-final last month, and we'd beaten St Johnstone 4-0 in the semi-final of the League Cup, and were favourites to beat them again, and you know, had a chance of winning the trophies this year, but they pulled out that day and beat us 2-1, which probably, from my own personal perspective, wasn't the worst, because trying to persuade the other half that I was going to Glasgow for a second cup final in the space of 2 months might have been pretty problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. That's tough to head back over there if you're going to... Well, look, 1 out of 2 ain't bad, so that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
For your side. Not bad at all. You were in Pittsburgh, obviously, because now you're in West Virginia, so Pittsburgh is really a hop, skip, and a jump for you. How was that match between the Riverhounds and the Red Bulls under-23s? Because that probably was exciting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it was a much-needed win for Pittsburgh. I saw John Wolniak there before the game, the former Red Bull striker. So I was having a quick chat with him beforehand just to sort of see who to keep an eye on in the Red Bulls team. And so he pinpointed Sean Davis in midfield as one to watch, and Aaron Bazilevich was another guy. So, you know, the Red Bulls lined up with the two of them in the centre of midfield, and then a third guy that they had in there called Chris Lima. And I thought the three of them played pretty well. You know, they moved the ball around well, passed it, retained possession well. I don't think they really ever had enough to hurt Pittsburgh. And I think, you know, there were two major factors which ultimately led to the result. Firstly, that Pittsburgh at set pieces were just dominating, and it was only a matter of time before they found a goal from that route. And secondly, in the last 20 minutes, just the gulf in fitness between a professional team and, you know, a bunch of college kids that are thrown together for an NPSL season. That was just too much in the last 25 minutes for the New York guys to handle.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Now, there was a penalty that was awarded to the Red Bulls and converted by Sean Sheridan in the 12th minute. Was there a foul in the box? Was it a handball? Because I was watching the stream and I couldn't tell why they got the penalty. I mean, you probably saw it better than I did, obviously.
I wish I did. it was one of these funny things that I think, and I was sitting sort of, if you were watching the game on the stream, I was sitting at that time more towards the opposite end that the Riverhounds had just scored into. And sort of for tactical reasons, I sat there because I thought that would be where all the action was. Within a minute of Pittsburgh going ahead, the next thing was the referee was pointing to the penalty spot. And, yeah, I didn't really see much myself. I spoke to one or two other people who said there was maybe a tug on a jersey as a cross came in. It seemed a little bit light, but, you know, Sheridan stuck it away well. And, you know, at that point, you know, New York were, you know, they were holding their own for a while.
Oh, they definitely were. I mean, the one guy on Pittsburgh, you have to admit, Robbie Vincent had so many chances in this match. I mean, you're thinking to yourself, when is he ever going to convert one? And he finally does to make it 3-1 Pittsburgh. But still, he had so many chances, either barely missing or it goes off the post, or Luro was right there for the save.
Yeah, and I think as well there was a huge chance, like again from a corner that Matt Dolman took from the left side, whipping in an inswinger, and Alfonso Motagalvan had a free header about 6 yards out. This was maybe half an hour in, and he somehow managed to steer that header wide. So yeah, I mean Pittsburgh had the chances, and I think just as the game went on, the last 25 minutes. New York were just really fading, and you know, I think 3-1 overall was quite a fair score. I know Joseph Ngwenya at the end had a 1-on-1 when he was clean through, and you know, 4-1 might have been a little bit harsh on the Red Bull team. I thought, you know, 3-1 was probably, you know, reflected. It was a comfortable win in the end.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. Once Ngwenya subbed in into the second half, I thought he was definitely going to help dominate this game for this Riverhound side, and of course, it's the former Red Bull. For that 1 year, I think in 2011 or 2012, Jose Angulo finally gets a nice cross, I think from Ngwenya, and he just goes right down the middle and he heads it past the keeper.
I think there was a Dalman again, corner kick from the left side, in-swinging corner kick. That was a real thriller for the Riverhounds last year. Dalman was the top assists man in the USL, and Angulo was joint top scorer with Don Dwyer. And won the season MVP award. So, you know, that's definitely the Riverhound sort of go-to combination, or has been. I think this season, you know, they tried to move away from that a little bit and bolster the squad a bit, but it's not quite been clicking for them yet. So, you know, from their perspective, they've been struggling along in the USL. So it's big for them just to get the confidence of winning a game. And then tomorrow night, Saturday night, Rochester Rhinos come into Pittsburgh. So they now have something they can build on.
Now, obviously, you know, for some of us that are not near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, talk about that location where Highmark Stadium is, because it looks like a pretty great place to watch a match here in the USL, especially those Riverhound fans. They finally got their own stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you watch the stream or you see the pictures, it's probably the most impressive backdrop in North American soccer at any level. I know a lot of people say Philadelphia Union Stadium has that pretty impressive look at the bridge over the back of it. So, hey, maybe Pennsylvania has the two top, you know, Pittsburgh 1 and Philadelphia 2. But I think, you know, the main thing is you want the product on the field to be the thing that you're looking at. And you know, Pittsburgh are an ambitious club. You know, all the noises that they've made are that as Orlando leave the USL behind, they want to be the next team that can really step up and become a power in that league. So the stadium is the first sort of, you know, the first piece that they've got away from playing in high school fields around the city. It's currently they can fit 4,000 in at a push. They have a standing area which goes along the riverside where there's no seating on that side. It's a railway track in the river and the downtown skyline behind it. But they can probably get about a good 500 people along that sideline. And they have room down there, so they can expand it if need be. So they can go from around 3,500 seats to about 7,000 seats. And this is, you know, they have some work to do. It's still early days. They still need to focus on packing out as it is at this moment in time. And then if they can double the capacity and they can, you know, get another few thousand people in down the line, then the conversation becomes right. You know, can we take it to the next level? And probably likely then they'd need to find another site to build an MLS stadium. But, you know, it's some way off. It's some way off.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I think to see them, if they can expand it, would be fantastic to see. You know, just keep on going. Like you've said before, it's early times at the moment. I think they have plenty of time to, you know, wait, be patient, make a statement in the Pittsburgh area. Obviously, we all know the Steelers run the town, the Pirates run the town, the Penguins run the town. Even the University of Pittsburgh runs the town when it gets to college basketball and everything. But still, if the Riverhounds can do this right, and they have time on their side, I wouldn't mind. I would like to believe they can be a part of the major, and if you know the major American teams that can help run that town as well.
Yeah, I mean, Western Pennsylvania is it's a hotbed of soccer, and the Riverhounds have a very good academy system. pretty similar to the Richmond Kickers. You know, so the particularly on the girls' side, they have phenomenal success with their under 15, under 16 academy teams. And again, it's the usual frustration. You know, you can go into a bar on Pittsburgh around about middle of a Saturday afternoon, and as you go in, all the guys wearing their Chelsea shirts and Tottenham shirts and whatever are leaving, having spent the morning there watching English games. But few of them have any interest in going to see the Riverhounds because it's minor league. So there's that dynamic which is playing out all over the country, which you've got. But I think certainly there's quite a vibrant amateur soccer scene, and so the fans are there. I think this summer we'll get some indication. I think it's AC Milan and Manchester City that are playing a friendly at Heinz Field. So we'll get some indication when we see what the attendance is for that game.
Yeah, very true. That'll be very interesting to see what's going to happen. So, Ian, obviously, Pittsburgh will be hosting their third-round match against, I have to say right now, a very dangerous amateur side, RWB Adria, the Croatian-American side coming out of Chicago. They took out Detroit City FC in penalties, and they had a 1-0 victory in extra time against the Michigan Bucks of the PDL. So they took out two of the top sides in the lower levels in Michigan, and now they're coming, which they're screaming for revenge because they last time they played the Riverhounds in the Open Cup, they lost to them in penalties. They're screaming for revenge. What do you think you're going to see out of the Riverhounds against this opponent?
Yeah, that's right. Last year it went to penalties, and the Riverhounds just managed to pull it out. But, the Riverhounds are a bit vulnerable in the U.S. Open Cup. If you look at it in the last few years, they've been put out by the Michigan Bucks. Last year they scraped by RWB Adria, and then they went out to the Ocean City Northeasterners. So they don't have a great recent record. Let's face it, though, they should have enough. They should have enough to win this game. It's just a case of, you know, if they can maybe get one or two results in the USL to keep the confidence going. If they can, I think they'll win the game safely enough. But there's just been a few issues with the Riverhounds this year. They've been struggling to find the net. You mentioned Josie Angulo earlier on, and you know, unfortunately for him, he had a personal issue with his father passing away recently, so he missed some game time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm so sorry to hear.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's for him, you know, he's missed some training, he's missed some games, so he's not quite where he should be. Johnny Arteaga, another ex-Red Bull player, he's had some groin issues, so he's been in and out of the team. Collins John had a 3-match suspension after being sent off against Wilmington earlier in the season, so Three big names that they've got up front, but none of them are really firing yet. You know, so there's a little bit of vulnerability, but I think, you know, come on, it's a professional team. They should be good enough to go on and win it. What I think is interesting is if they do, and let's just assume, you know, no disrespect to Adria, but let's just assume that the Riverhounds do get through, and with today's draw, they'll play Chicago Fire away from home. And that would be a chance for revenge, because winding the clock back to 2001, the Riverhounds, I think it was the only time they beat an MLS team. They beat the Colorado Rapids, and they went to Chicago in the quarterfinal and ended up losing 3-2 to a sudden-death overtime goal scored by Amos McGee. And Peter Wilt, the Indianapolis chairman, just I had a tweet back and forward with him earlier on because he was at Chicago at the time.
He sent
me a YouTube link. And it was 2-2. Hristo Stoichkov had scored for the Chicago Fire. So this is going back, you know. Carlos Bocanegra played. DeMarcus Beasley played. Dema Kovalenko, I think, got the second goal. And then in injury time, the sudden-death winner was a cross ball comes into the box. And Amos McGee kind of stoops on the six-yard line and manages to bundle the ball over the line with his chest. And apparently the legend of Chesty McGee was born. So the Riverhounds
God.
Have a...
No, it's brilliant. Good old Peter Wilt. Let me tell you something. I had him on my show before Indy 11 ever got their name down. But, boy, I'll tell you, Peter has done a fantastic job either with Chicago Fire or with the Indy 11. He's a magic man. I'll be honest with you. He knows what to do to get people excited for a professional for professional side, and whether it's MLS or any professional league in U.S. soccer, boy, I'll tell you.
Well, it was certainly a nugget that he dropped in my timeline earlier on today. So
I gotta go and look at your timeline then, because I'm gonna have a laugh too if I see that. Oh boy, Chesty McGee. Yeah, there we go. Absolutely. Wow. Well, Ian, listen, thanks a lot for the time. And as always, you know, you're more than welcome to return anytime you want. You have permission, Mr. Iron Scotsman. So listen, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you. Have a great weekend, Daniel.
Thanks. You too. It's Ian Thompson, the Soccer Observer, as Pittsburgh Riverhounds has a RWB Adria. We could see a pretty good match. Obviously, go to thecup.us to find out if any of these games will be streamed. I'm assuming Pittsburgh's will be streamed since they'll be home. So hopefully we'll see a stream of that match as we get ready for these games in at least a week and a half. And now it's time to preview the third round matchups between these sides here in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup as we get ready to discuss what's going to happen here. On Tuesday, May 27th, Rochester Rhinos will be hosting Reading United at 7:35 p.m. Eastern over at Sealand Stadium in Rochester, New York. As Mr. Doherty said, it will not be streamed, but he will be tweeting. So hopefully follow his tweets on Twitter, and we'll see what happens. The rest of these games, May 28th, which is the original date of these games, 16 matches, 32 clubs. Excuse me. Let me just double-check to make sure my math is not wrong. Yep, 32 teams, 16 matches, round three. On Wednesday, May 28th, at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Baltimore Bohemians will be hosting the Harrisburg City Islanders at Calvert Hall College High School in Townsend, Maryland. Richmond Kickers of the USL Pro League will be hosting the New York Greek American Atlas at Richmond City Stadium in Richmond, Virginia at 7 o'clock Eastern. Pittsburgh Riverhounds will be hosting RWB Adria once again at Highmark Stadium in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then the New York Cosmos making their first ever U.S. Open Cup match. The original Cosmos never, ever got involved. The original NESL League never, ever got involved with the U.S. Open Cup. So for the New York Cosmos, this will be officially their first Open Cup match. They will not be at Hofstra in Long Island. They'll be at Belfin Stadium on the campus of St. John's in Queens, New York, as the New York Cosmos will be hosting the Brooklyn Italians of the NPSL. May 28th, at Wake Med Soccer Park, the Carolina Railhawks hosting the Charlotte Eagles at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, we have the Chattanooga FC hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks once again at Finley Stadium in Chattanooga, Tennessee, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. At Blackbaud Stadium in Charleston, South Carolina, the Charleston Battery being the Orlando City's under-23 squad. So it will be Orlando City Light, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, assuming there will be a stream for that one. At the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in the Walt Disney World Complex on the Kissimmee side in Florida. This has been talked about for a good while. This is going to be the war on I-4. Interstate 4 goes across Orlando into Tampa Bay in the west, to Daytona to the east. The Tampa Bay Rowdies travel and take on the Orlando City senior side in the land of Walt Disney World. It should be a lot of fun. Go ahead and get your mouse ears for that one if you want. Ha, 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 I know. The Indy 11 will be making their U.S. Open Cup debut as well as they host the Dayton Dutch Lions over at Carroll Stadium at IUPUI in Indianapolis, Indiana. If you do want to go there and you're not from the Indianapolis area And if you're going to take your car there, it's up to you. You want to take a bus, it's up to you. Once again, I always suggest Amtrak. If you're coming from New York State, here's what you do. You take the Cardinal from New York Penn Station, and you go all the way into Indianapolis. It'll be a day and a half ride, almost a day and a half, and then you get to a local hotel. There's actually a Crown Plaza that's connected to the train station because it's right there on the back side, because this is a great place. Let me tell you, if you're looking at Google Maps, you go two blocks north, two blocks east, the home arena for the NBA's Indiana Pacers. If you go from the hotel, you go one block west, and then you go underneath the train tracks, for so one block south, southwest, Lucas Oil Stadium, the home of the Indianapolis Colts of the NFL. If you're going to go two blocks north, 2 to 3 blocks west, the Indianapolis Indians, the AAA affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And if you continue on west and you go around the river on that walkway bend, IUPUI campus is right there. Carroll Stadium is right there, about two to three more blocks west of the AAA minor league baseball stadium. And go catch the Indy 11. It's wonderful. If you're going from Chicago, if you go to the Chicago hub and then you pick up that train to go to Indianapolis, boom, it's right there. It is absolutely awesome. I haven't done it yet. I do want to make a trip to Indianapolis if I can, hopefully to catch a home game, whether it's NASL season or Open Cup. Truly want to go and check out a match over there. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of excitement. I cannot wait for that. Once again, here we go. Fort Lauderdale Strikers will be at home hosting the Laredo Heat at Lockhart Stadium in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. That's a 7:45 p.m. Eastern start time. And just to double-check with you, Indy 11 versus the Dayton Dutch Lions, that's a 7:30 p.m. Eastern start time as well, Eastern time. So go ahead and check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. As we continue on here, with the rest of the third round schedule, the San Antonio Scorpions will be hosting North Texas Rayados at Toyota Field in San Antonio, Texas, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central start time. Des Moines Menace under-23s will be taking on the Minnesota United FC. They'll be hosting it at the Valley Stadium in West Des Moines, Iowa. And that's an 8:30 p.m. Eastern start, 7:30 p.m. Central. And the West Coast games, here it is, at the Peoria Sports Complex in Peoria, Arizona. Arizona United will be taking on the Oklahoma City Energy FC. This is the only matchup that will have two teams in the same league facing each other. Usually U.S. soccer doesn't want to do that, but they've decided to do so because of the unevenness of the opponents. So that's a 10:30 p.m. Eastern start time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific start time. And the final two matches in round three, we're going to have the Sacramento Republic of the USL Pro League hosting the Fresno Fuego, and I thought it was Orange County that had those. Let me double check there because I could be wrong because I want to make sure. Yeah. Let's double check these players again, because unless Orange County got hit with something that I'm not aware of. So we're just going to quickly double check here because I want to make sure I am correct in all this. Because if County, let me check the roster. Because we want to make sure that we have the right players and the, you know, scoring the goals for the right team. And you know what? I made the error. I did make an error, so that's my bad. You can go ahead, point the finger of blame at me. it's A-OK. So Orange County was eliminated as Fresno advances to the third round, and they'll be on the road in Sacramento. So I apologize to everyone over in Fresno. It's my bad. No one else's. My bad. I made the mistake. So we are all good to go, as I am all caught up in the proper way, as we now, or I now, give the proper final here. Fresno Fuego 2, Orange County 0, and the Fresno Fuego will be on the road at Sacramento Republic at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. And the final match of round three, the LA Galaxy 2 squad of the USL Pro League will be hosting the PSA Elite over at the StubHub Center Track and Field Stadium in Carson, California. And once again, a 10:30 p.m. Eastern start time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific start time. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, as we are now finished here with round two, getting ready for round three. Matches will happen within a week and a half, as once again, we are having a round three matchup that's going to sound pretty interesting as we continue on here. Anytime you need information from any U.S. Open Cup match daily, thecup.us, run by Josh Hakala, head on over to that website. I understand everyone crashed it while he was on NASN at the time. So you know what? If it was crashed, it was a good reason why. Because why? Because everyone loves the U.S. Open Cup. The 101st edition of the U.S. Open Cup is right here, right now. It is absolutely fantastic, as we are already over 100 years, celebrating 100 years of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It is absolutely fun, fantastic. It's great. And as I've already corrected myself now it's officially corrected on the official Feuerstein's Fire page, my own page, not on the internet just yet, but thinking about it, but we'll worry about that later. But as always, anytime you want to discuss about the U.S. Open Cup, of course, you go to Big Soccer, go to their U.S. Open Cup page, you talk to go to thecup.us. And don't forget, you could always listen to every single round of the U.S. Open Cup in review of each and every round here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. We talk to those players, bloggers, supporters, coaches to come on here to talk about their victories in this great tournament, and hopefully you enjoy the discussion as much as I have. It's a pleasure to always talk to these people that get involved in the U.S. Open Cup, and of course, it's always a fun thing to discuss. Now, obviously, the fourth round draw is already out. So until those matches have been played on May 27th and May 28th, once certain results do come in a week and a half, we will discuss the fourth round. And once again, I'm very happy to see the fifth round being added by U.S. Soccer, by the Open Cup Committee. Obviously, it's going to get a lot more difficult and a lot more tougher to try and to get all these games involved. But you know what? It's really worth the wait. It's really exciting. I'm excited about it. And I'm just very glad that everything is going right with the U.S. Open Cup and with the U.S. Open Cup Committee, as well as U.S. Soccer, for getting this thing done. I want to thank my guests for tonight, of course, Brendan Doherty in Rochester, Bob Larson in the Newark, Northern New Jersey area, Bill Elliott, head coach of the Chattanooga FC, Michael Delarusso, head coach of Arizona United, and, of course, the Soccer Observer, who was in Pittsburgh for round two, Ian Thompson giving us the blow-by-blow of what happened in that Open Cup matchup with the Red Bulls under 23 squad. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. whether you were listening to me on live or archive, always come here for the 40 Seats Fire American Soccer Show next week, regular show only, and the week later, a full squad, a full schedule week of shows, regular show on Monday, USA versus Azerbaijan post-game show, and then, of course, Open Cup review on that Friday, the final Friday in the month of May. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. I thank you for listening to me tonight, and as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, and we'll talk to you on Tuesday. Bye-bye for now.